Joining us on the line now from Ireland is Niall Power. He's been a professional drummer on the Irish and international circuits for over four decades. He's toured and performed with everyone from Bob Geldof to Westlife to Marianne Faithfull. An early diagnosis of Parkinson's sadly quashed his career, but his extraordinary determination to combat the disease has also inspired him to write his memoirs, Timing is Everything. Welcome to the show, Niall.
Good morning from a very foggy Ireland.
Oh, is it? I hate to say it's sunny here in Spain.
Yeah, it's quite normal for us to get this weather. Anyway, how are you?
I'm all right, thank you. How are you?
I'm very good. And as I say, I'm fighting my corner.
Yeah, definitely. You're doing an amazing job. Before we talk about the Parkinson's, which I want to ask you about, I have to ask you about your incredible career. How did you get into drumming?
In a very strange way, my dad was in the Irish Army, and when I was a child in the 60s, we had two marching bands in the Curragh camp, and they used to pass by my window every day when they were parading up to the church or something, you know. And I used to say, run out to these guys, and the drummer was there, and I said, I'd love to be the drummer in that band. Mm-hmm. And that's how it really started. There was no music in my family. Nobody played any instruments, and apart from having the odd whiskey, my dad would sing a tune every now and again when the mood stuck him. But so I followed these guys, and I always wanted to be the drummer. And I went to school when I was about five, and I joined the school band, and I became an accordionist in the school band.
Mm.
And I sort of, the reason I did that was to get out of doing the lessons. So you get a free hour every day to learn your accordion. And by the age of 12 then, I realised that the accordion is no good anymore. It's not very rock and roll, and I just wanted to buy a drum kit and play the drums. And that's where the early influence came from.
And with drumming, did you find that you sort of taught yourself? Did you have lots of lessons? Did you kind of play along to other drummers? How did you do it?
Yeah, I taught myself. I bought my drums one at a time, and I learned how to play left-handed by accident, because I could never set up a full kit. So I played left-handed, even though I was a right-handed person, because I wasn't really sure. And back in those days, there wasn't much music on television apart from the Monkees and bands like that.
Mm.
And if you look at the drummer from the Monkees, Mickey Dolenz, he sort of set up his kit in a very unusual way, because basically he was a performer. He wasn't a drummer. He ended up being a drummer, but I just copied his style. And obviously the Beatles and the Stones were on the radio, and I taught myself by learning to playing alongside records, just putting on a record on the record player and copying it as best I could.
Mm.
And it took me a few years to do that, you know, because nowadays people just look at YouTube and they can copy anything they want to play. So kids can learn quite quickly. But back in the late 60s, there wasn't much of that around. You had to sort of look at Irish television and see who was on and just copy people and copy their photographs and look at their photographs and see how they set up their drums. And so it took me a few years. It took me about 4 years. And by 1975, I was ready to join a band, and I got my first job in a show band in Ireland.
Mm. And how long were you doing that for?
For 5 years. Well, show bands, you know, are a great training ground for any musician, because basically you have to learn all new songs every week, three or four of the hit parade. And so you're learning all the time. And I spent 5 years in show bands, but it's not really where I wanted to be. I wanted to be in a rock band. I always had, as a child, I followed bands like Thin Lizzy and Rory Gallagher and all those Irish bands and Led Zeppelin, and that's where I wanted to be. So in 1980, I managed to get a job with a rock band in Dublin called Stepaside. And that was my first time to play, you know, original music. Up to then, it was all covers, you know, what was in the charts and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So Stepaside was my first break, really.
And how did you then get in touch with Bob Geldof? Or did he get in touch with you? How did that happen?
That happened, you know, when I was writing my book, I realized how much luck I had in my career. You know, I started off, you know, not knowing how to do things. And every time I got one job, I moved on to another job, and people started phoning me up and saying, can you do this? Can you do this? So they must have thought I was good. I didn't think I was very good, but other people did. And so what happened with the Bob Geldof situation was I was playing with a lady called Hazel O'Connor. I don't know if you're familiar with
her.
She had a number one single with a song called Will You from the movie Breaking Glass. And I was playing in her band, and she supported Bob Geldof in a concert one day. And I was, I just finished my set with her, and I was watching the next band. And the bass player from the Bob Geldof band came up to me, tapped me on the shoulder, and he said, "Were you the drummer in the last band?" I said, "I was." He said, "Well, our drummer is leaving in about 3 weeks' time. Would you like to come to London and have an audition?" So I said, "This is great, you know." And he said, "Come up to the dressing room and give me your details." So I went up to the dressing room. I passed on all my details, my address and my phone number. And he said, "We'll be in touch." And the manager took down my details. And they phoned me up and said, "Come to London in 3 weeks' time," and gave me the address. So I duly arrived in London to do the audition. And when I got to the audition place, my name wasn't on the list.
No.
And I said to the lady at the reception, I said, "You know, I'm here for the Bob Geldof audition." And she said, "I better call the manager. I don't see your name on the list." So he came out and he said, "Who are you?" And I said, "I met you in Dublin 3 weeks ago." "Oh, yeah," he said. "Yeah." He said, "I'm here for the audition." And he said, "Well," he said, "we're full up for today, but I'll bring you in last," he said. So he brought me in at 5 o'clock in the evening. And there was about 10 other drummers in front of me. And I just went into the room and he said, "Did you get the tape?" And I said, "No, I never got any tape." So I played two songs off the top of my head for the band. And they asked me to stay on and play with the next guitar player who was auditioning. And that night I got the boat back to Ireland. And I was no sooner in the house at 10 o'clock the next morning when the phone rings and it says, "You've got the gig."
Oh, wow.
So I had to get back on the boat the next day and go back to England to rehearse. And that's how I got the job with Bob Geldof.
Oh, fantastic.
Which lasted for 25 years.
Amazing. And you toured with them?
I toured all over the world with Bob solo now, not the Boomtown Rats. It was Bob's solo career.
Yeah.
So the Boomtown Rats actually finished in 1986. And Bob started his solo career. And I joined in 1990. And I finished in 2015.
Wow. And was it amazing? Was it everything you dreamed it would be?
Absolutely amazing. I got to play in South America and the Far East and all these places I couldn't even dream about, you know, when I was a child trying to drum. And I also, like, the biggest event I ever played at was the anniversary of Live Aid, which is the Live Aid in 2005 in Hyde Park in London.
Oh, wow.
And I was thinking that day, you know, from the stage, how many years ago I was in the backyard of our house trying to drum, and here I am on the Live Aid stage, you know, in front of millions of people on TV.
Incredible.
It was a dream. The whole thing was a dream. And I loved every minute of it, you know.
And I imagine Bob Geldof quite an incredible character to work with as well.
Certainly is. A man who doesn't mince his words. My worst weekend with him was the first weekend where he just was laying down the rules and saying, "I want it done this way." And he had me in tears on the first night.
Oh, no.
He doesn't explain himself very well, but you get the message, if you know what I mean. And I just had to knuckle down and do what he wanted me to do. And we never had a crossword from that first weekend onwards.
Oh, wonderful. I saw it.
He's been very good to me. You know, he's a great guy. He kept me in that job all those years, so I must have been doing something right.
Oh, definitely. He speaks very highly of you as well. I watched the clip that you sent me of when there was a feature on Irish television.
About
you talking about your book, and Bob Geldof was on it and was talking about what a great guy you are and what a great memory you've got for all the all the things you put
all
in
the
book.
Stuff, yeah. I think the reason for the good memory is that I enjoyed everything so much. It's all just sitting there in my brain, and you can ask me anything about anywhere, anytime, any place we played, I'll remember, because I enjoyed the whole thing.
Yeah, fabulous.
And unfortunately, you know, when the Parkinson's thing arrived, you know, it changed me as a person. It still hurts to this day, you know. But I just get on with it now, you know. I can't drum anymore, but it's unfortunate to get something like this as a musician, you know, because it takes away your actual talent. The thing I loved the most was my drumming, and it just disappeared.
So how, other than that, how does it affect you in your daily life?
My daily life is pretty good. You know, I shake quite a bit. I've got this many different stages in Parkinson's. I have it 11 years now, and I'm still doing quite well. I just can't drum at all. I can't hold the stick in my left hand. And at first, you know, when you get something like this going on, you don't really know what it is. Like my initial feeling was that when I played the drums, my left side was beginning to fail on me. My left foot, as for want of a metaphor, was going down, and I used to play. One beat was nice and strong, and the next beat was sort of soft, and I didn't know what that was, you know, and it sort of manifested itself over time, over about a two-year period into, you know, a loss of power on the left side. And then I went to neurology, and it took them 9 months to find out that I had Parkinson's, because it's so slow when it starts, you don't really realize, you know, what's happening to you. It's not something that you would experience normally, you know?
Yeah.
But my initial response was that I knew something was wrong, but I couldn't ever think it was Parkinson's.
No.
And it only really happened when I played the drums, you know? So once I stopped playing drums, I was perfectly normal. And so it was a big shock to the system to find out that you've got something very serious wrong with you, you know? And such a minimal, like... interference, really.
So, how are things now? What's the sort of prognosis?
Pretty
with it?
Good. I've just been to Australia for a holiday for 7 weeks, and I cycled all around the place, and I felt great over there. So I might have to move.
Yeah, sounds good.
Yeah, but you know, I'm still strong. I just miss the drumming so much. I also miss all the camaraderie with the band. You know.
Yeah.
Going to gigs and doing what bands do, you know, friendships.
Absolutely.
Well, but, you know, I wouldn't say it's the worst disease out there to have, because at least you've still got your life, you know, so you just got to get on with it every day and do as best you can and fight every day, every single day.
Yeah, well, you sound like a real inspiration, and your book is fab. If people want to get a copy, it's called Timing is Everything, and it's by Niall Power, who we've been chatting to. Niall, thank you so much for joining us, and I wish you all the best.
Thank you, Hannah. Appreciate it. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.